Thanks for everybody that's read, and welcome to those that have joined us since we started. Chief, welcome to any newcomers or visitors to the meeting tonight. We hope you hear something in the meeting that's going to help you to make the choice to keep coming back to NA and to our meetings. Like I said, we're a speaker meeting tonight, and it falls on me to introduce our speaker. This is a person I've named since 2011. We actually first met because they invited me over to share some sushi with them by the side of a pool in a hotel in Tampa, Florida. And I think we've become close over the years. We've met each other once or twice, and it's always a pleasure. I respect this person's recovery immensely. She has shared for us before. Bit of a backstory with that is that. Purely, and I don't believe in coincidence in Narcotics Anonymous, but when I first met Jay, I was speaking to Jay on the phone or on Skype or something like that, I think it was Skype, and this person was in the background going, I know that person's voice, and kind of the rest is history. So without any further ado, really, I'm going to introduce you to Dawn, who's agreed to come along and share her experience, strength, and hope with us today. So Dawn, love you, sweetheart, and please share with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Oh, hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Dawn.
Hello,
hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Dawn.
Oh, good. Yay. So, yeah. Steve, you are my brother from another mother. Now, you could come visit anytime you want.
Okay, so they asked me to share. And I can tell you this, that I don't really want to share today. And that's when I probably really need to share. And it's not that. It's the fact that, you know, life on life terms sometimes just sucks. So and I probably start at the beginning. And the beginning is. Everything our literature talks about are done. Jails, institutions, clinically there twice, substituted one for another, substituted two or three more, substituted geographic locations. Started using when I was 8. My first drug was alcohol. I got a warm, fuzzy feeling, and I didn't stop until I got from.
Okay, so I, all the things that our literature talked about, I've done. Substituted one drug for another, geographic locations, jails, institutions, been clinically dead twice. First drug was alcohol when I was 8. First time I was institutionalized for, first time I was in jail was 14. You know, everything our literature talks about, I pretty much have done. I tried to get clean at 14. I wasn't ready. And I should have known because my first meeting from our parent fellowship was this woman stood at the podium and told my story. And I looked around that room and said, there is no way. There's no way. I'm 14 years old. I don't know what's in the coffee, but there's no way. What happened was, you know, I did all the things that our literature talks about. May 19th, 1982, in a blackout, I almost killed my baby brother. May 20th of 1982, I went to a noon meeting. Back then I went to AA, and I haven't had the need to pick up since. And I think about it, I think, oh my God, those one days at a time added up. And I also think that, you know, in my head, I still think I'm 25, and my body very nicely tells me I'm not. You know, I got clean. I got clean and I I did all the things they told me to do because when I got here, my name in the rooms was Tornado Hurricane because I would come in and start feeling good and looking good, and then I would be out. You know, and I did that for a long time. I'm not a one key tag wonder. But I do have one 90-day key tag, and I only have 1 6-month, and I only have 1 9-month, and I only have 1 year. I just couldn't get that 90 days. So, you know, in the beginning of my recovery, you know, I was young and I was crazy. I mean, I was, you know, the only thing that really stopped was that I stopped doing the chemicals. And I tried to get some honesty. I couldn't tell anybody I was afraid. I couldn't tell you that I was, when I started to work, I was terrified of having money in my pocket. So we started a meeting at 10 o'clock on Friday night because that was a really hard time for me. So, but I couldn't say, hey, I'm scared and I got money in my pocket and will you help me? I was, I kind of intimidated everybody to do this. And I did that a lot. I'm almost 6'1". And I learned a long time ago how to use my physicalness to get what I wanted. So the early part of my recovery was pretty wonderful and pretty intense and, you know, feeling feelings and making mistakes and, you know, doing all those things they told me to do. I can tell you that I have relationships that are as old as I am clean. And I get really emotional when I share about this because I also get into, when I got here, I was not human. I was animal. I lived like an animal. I acted like an animal. And so I never want to forget where I came from, ever. You know, so... some things happened. I made a decision to go to NA only in the state of Florida. And, you know, we did asphalt recovery because we would drive for chemicals. So we would drive for Narcotics Anonymous. And most of those people that I did that with are still clean. Because that's, we were the last house on the block, but we had each other. you know, I work steps. You know, my sponsor told me that I needed to know what addiction was in the first step. We admitted we were powerless over addiction and their lives had become unmanageable. Now I could tell you that my life was unmanageable. But I, you know, I thought addiction meant drugs. You know, I didn't, wasn't really focusing really well. Today, addiction for me is the same thing it was when I had to make the definition for myself. And that is, the addiction is anything I use outside of me to help me escape me. And it doesn't matter if it's a chemical, and it doesn't matter if it's little mini Snickers bars or credit cards or sneakers or shoes or people, places, or things. I can become addicted to just about anything. So I can tell you that I did all the things they told me to do. I worked steps and I got service commitments, sponsor people. Not really, I hijacked them because I couldn't tell you about really working a program besides what my sponsor told me to do. But I did a lot of service. Because people in service in my early recovery were just like me. We were crazy. I mean, It would be nothing to say, oh, 4 o'clock on Friday, let's drive 4 hours to go support some area somewhere and go to a dance and stay up all night and drive back. So I can tell you that that only worked for so long. At about 3 years and 3 months, and I'm going to tell you this because it's important and it interfered with my recovery. I wanted to die. I mean, I just wanted to die. I thought there's got to be more than going to meetings and working steps and going to meetings and working steps and going to work and doing the same thing, same time, same place every day. I was, in my head, I was doing all the right things, but in my spirit, I just couldn't do it anymore. And so for 2 weeks, me and the God of my understanding had a discussion. Now, this is how good my disease was. In the daytime, I would be fine. I would go to work. I would do my commitments. I was married at the time. My husband would go to sleep, and I would be on my knees with razor blades trying to figure out how I was going to kill myself and not make a mess. And having conversation with whatever it was, some power greater than myself. I think on the 14th day, I just said, you win. Whatever you are, whoever you are, whatever you are, I can't do this anymore. I realized today that's when I did my third step. And I haven't done a third step since because I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And I have no regrets. And I have not looked back. I come from a place today where I co-create. And since that time, I've never been without. And I say that because I've never been without the basics of being a human being. I've never been without a shelter, food, warm coat. I've never been without emotional, mental, physical support. I've never been without. And that sometimes the gifts that I receive come in some really strange wrappings. So the next phase of my recovery is that, you know, I grew up in NA. I mean, I learned how to be a friend and how to make friends, and I learned how to be in relationships, and I learned how to go to jobs, and I learned how to be a productive, responsible member of society. And I've had this magnificent, amazing, wonderful life. And I've had death and divorce and illness and bankruptcies and births and cars and this and that and all this outside stuff. But I've never really lost the core of what the program has given me. And that is freedom. I have so much freedom today. I have the freedom to be who I choose to be. I have freedom of choice. I have, when I was using, you know, my addiction dictated everything. It dictated my whole existence. And today I don't have that. I have a power greater than myself. And sometimes we still go rounds. There's a sweetness in surrender. I can't put it in any other way than that. I can tell you that life happens, and that how I deal with it is a direct result of how I am in my center of my recovery. And I say center of recovery because first and foremost, I'm an addict. You know, my name and everything that comes after that doesn't really matter, because if I forget that, If I forget that I have the disease of addiction, I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose it all. And the greatest thing I'm going to lose is my sense of self and my connection and my relationships with people, and including the God of my understanding. Now don't get me wrong. Money, property, and prestige has diverted me from my primary purpose.
I grow up in the rooms. I do some really crazy things in recovery that I'm still clean from. I get into a relationship. I get married. I get married and I have some physical things that I can't have children, biologically can't have children, and it's the only thing, one of the things I've ever wanted in my whole life. And what happens is that I get married and I become a mom through adoption. I have two beautiful children, ooh, that are 16. Besides getting clean, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. And so, but as a result, I go out and be a responsible, productive member of society. I start a business. We make a lot of money. I go to one meeting a week. I get diverted from everything. That's important. What happens is my ex-husband at the time starts using chemicals, and I used to say this prayer that said, God, when you're ready, I'll be willing, or God, when you're willing, I'll be ready. I still say it today. So my thing was, God, when you're ready to show me what I need to see, I'll be willing to do what I need to do. Or God, when you're willing to let me know what I'm supposed to do, I'll be ready to do it. And I'm going to say that in one day, in less than 30 seconds, my whole world changed. I found a bunch of chemicals. I found a bunch of drugs. Let's call it what it is. The God of my understanding showed me something, and it was very painful. And that is that my husband at the time was in his addiction, and he was unwilling to change or do anything about it. And I walked away from all of it. The only thing I kept was my clean date and my children, cars, the motorcycles, the boats, the businesses, all of it. I started all over again at 27 years clean. And I say that because at any given point in time, everything can change, and it's how I deal with it. I got arrested for a crime I didn't even commit with 27 years clean. Oh, that was fun. And my thing was, okay, my whole thing was call my support, and that there's a reason for everything, and that I don't have to use, and that it's going to be okay. Now, by this time in my recovery, using's probably one of the last options on my list. However, my disease was very active, and I started to plot and plan, which is never good for me, especially the people that know me. So I went back really quick to basics. I started reaching out to my support, and I started dealing with life on life's terms, and I started to suit up and stand up and show up and teach my kids, lead by example. Now I can tell you that it was probably one of the most painful times in my recovery. It was, the gift is that the gift from all of that is I have two very bright, beautiful children. I live in an entirely different place in the United States, in a home that I own,
in doing a job that I love, with people who love and support me. And I went back to the field. You know, I'm working on a master's degree in mental health and substance use. And I work in a residential treatment facility, and that where I live now is like where I got clean. It's really small, and everybody knows everybody, and everybody puts out their hand, and especially in the recovery community, we all help each other. And we start meetings, and we drive, and we support meetings, and we have big picnics, and you know, it's not like that it's full circle. It's the fact that I'm different, and I still get a charge. When I see the lights go on, and I get to see it just about every day. Now, whether the lights stay on or not is, you know, I just do my part. And my part is I'm an addict. I'm in long-term recovery, and this is how I did it. You know, I don't have to be a bully. I don't have to hijack people anymore. I have spiritual principles in my life that are pretty amazing. And I owe it all to this fellowship. And then I did the work. There's a line in what's the book? I don't usually quote literature, but there are two pieces of, in the basic text, my favorite line is, it is available to us all. And that all included me. And when I first got here, I didn't know that. And the second line is from the Living Clean book in the preface, and it says that recovery is a full contact, lifelong process. And I can tell you that it is a full contact, lifelong process. And then as I grow and change, that I just keep getting better and better. And it's not that I was worse to begin with. Well, I was pretty bad. You know, that I have relationships today. I have relationships with people from doing my 9th and 10th step, namely my family. That I thought those relationships were damaged beyond repair. You know, I tell the newcomer that I've never seen that if you continue to do the right thing, that, you know, that you heal and families heal and relationships change. And I think that I have this wonderful tool bag that gives me tools to help me to continue to grow and develop and be the best version of myself. And I was just talking to somebody about, you know, online virtual meetings. And I give this information to a lot of people because I live in a very remote area. That when I first moved here, there was 2 meetings in 50 miles. And now there's 6 meetings. And the 6 meetings are within 30 miles of where I live. And that they're getting ready to start 3 new noontime meetings. And that's pretty amazing. For me, it's pretty amazing. And that people are getting clean here and they're staying clean. And that process will always continue to amaze me. Always. Because I know about the desperation, and I know about the hopelessness, and I know about the last house on the block, and I understand and know about self-loathing, self-hate, no self-esteem, no self-worth. I know that society doesn't, it's better now, but when I got clean, society, I was always going to be a dope fiend junkie. I was never going to amount to anything. I was never going to be worth anything. And
That's not true. You know, that is so not true that, you know, we do recover and we continue to recover, and that I personally will always be recovering. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, first of all, I can't see you, so it's easier in some aspects, and in other aspects, it's like, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I got asked to do this. I'm so grateful that there's people in this room that I know that they're still here too. I can't, you know, and in spite of everything and what's going on in my life right now, I have tools. I have hope. I have some really messy wrapping for this gift. I wish I knew what the gift was, because there's part of me that said, yeah, I don't want this gift, whatever it is. It's too much work. By doing the next right thing, by working steps and being of service, by putting my hand out, you know, because somebody put their hand out for me. I think that the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. I think that if you're struggling, just hold on. It's going to get better, I promise you. I promise you, as long as you don't use, it's going to get better. It might not get better right away, but it's going to get better. And the getting better could be something as simple as my perception of it all. And that it's hard. You know, I think about, yeah, growing up, I'm going to be dead by the time I'm 25. And now I'm 50, I don't even know how old I am, 57 maybe? Yeah, 57. And that, some days I look at myself and think, who are you in the mirror? And I think about, my body aches. What the hell is this? I think that I have the privilege of growing old. Because to me today, it is a privilege. You know, by all accounts, I shouldn't be here. You know, I should be not here. You know, and you think about that when I see people that are coming in. And I think, you know, there is something bigger and better than all of us and the disease of addiction. And that, I don't know if I'm making any sense to any of you. I'm grateful. And I'm still overwhelmed. And it still all overwhelms me. You know, there are days that I think, I'm clean. What the hell? And I'm like, I got a code that I live by. And it's, you know, I'm not sticking guns in people's faces, and I'm not sticking needles in my arm, and I'm putting out my hand to help somebody, and I'm opening doors for, you know, I mean, it's just like, who are you? And today I know that, you know, Narcotics Anonymous has given me the privilege to be the person that the universe designed for me to be to begin with. And some days I'm really, really good at it. Some days I'm not really, really good at it. Just this past week, you know, at my job, they're pretty good with knowing who I am, because I'm pretty transparent. You know, one client said to another, you just don't talk to her today until she, because she's breathing fire down the hall. And so I had to stop and say, you know, I'm trying to deal with a disease that wants you dead, attached to a body of a human being who just needs to be loved. And sometimes that's a hard place to be. The other part of that is that I'm that person too. You know, some days my disease is still out to get me in cunning, sneaky ways. And I'm just a person who just wants to be loved and just wants to love. You know, just... Sorry. I sometimes hear voices that aren't mine, and it's, you know, it's like, okay, Dawn, you need to hush now. So if you're struggling, I can tell you it gets better. And if you're not struggling and life is grand and wonderful, trust me, that'll change too. I'm an addict and my name is Dawn and I'm in recovery for a long period of time and I have an amazing, wonderful life with people who love me and I am loved and I love. It has nothing to do with the outside. It has everything to do with the inside. And then I have a power greater than myself who supports me and I have a fellowship that supports me and and then I've been given this gift. And I do the work to keep the gift. When everything inside of me screams, you know, cancel today and don't share. Don't let them see you. And don't get emotional. And don't. And it's like somebody told me a long time ago, you know, they said no, just doing something. And everybody was jumping them in. How can I say no to being of service to something that saved my life and continues to give me a life beyond measure? I can't. And that I might be uncomfortable and I might think this is so weird. And I'm thinking in my head right now, thank God they can't see me. I don't know if I made any sense to anybody. But I can't tell you how much I am, how grateful I am that somewhere in cyberspace, in your living room or your dining room or your bedroom or outside or wherever you are, that you're on the other end of this. Because I still remember that I never have to be alone ever again. I don't know if I shared long enough. But I want y'all to know that I'm so grateful that you're here and that thanks for being here too, because I can't do this by myself. So thanks for letting me share.